Welcome back, America 13, before the top of the hour. I am Bill Martinez, and we're talking with Bruce Thatcher. His book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. Bruce, as always, great to have you on with us. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing just fine, Bill. Good to be back.
Hey, we want to talk about this 844-page proposed legislation known as S-744, the Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act. You write that it is comprehensive and that it covers all or most elements of immigration law. It contains many provisions that, if actually implemented, would improve immigration, but it fails to address several matters critical to a successful immigration policy. So we're going to give you all the time you need in order to unravel that as best you can here, considering that we've got about 20 minutes to do it.
Well, we might not unravel it all in 20 minutes or so, Bill, but the things that struck out to me as I read through that, and I did, I read through that whole thing, which is 844 pages, just as a beginning. I'll bet it'll be more pages before it's done.
Oh, yeah.
What it does is it begins with, in its premise, its first Article 2, it talks about why the statement of congressional findings, why we're doing this, and some would think that that would be establishing national interest, but it doesn't really very well articulate long-term national interest. It's obvious from that statement in the bills that it's focused on illegal immigration and protecting the borders. But in that, even in that first page and a half of material, it mentions protecting the borders, prosperity, integrating newcomers, justice, safety, military strength, ethics, security, and maintaining sovereignty among the various goals. And that's, frankly, that's too vague and too many national interests to really control what's going on.
Exactly.
And it doesn't even talk about, in terms of national interests, the kinds of immigrants that we want to bring into the country. So I fear that not articulating that's going to be a problem in terms of what we end up with.
Well, and to your point, Bruce, in your book, Immigration, you cite that national interest, in terms of focusing, you know, a laser focus on national interest is so key. And certainly it's right up there in front saying, okay, but they give it lip service. They're really not targeting it in a way to where it can be accountable.
That's right. And the countries that have been successful, that have had successful immigration policies, and that includes our own country with the policy that existed from 1921 to 1964, have had very clear national interests that guide their immigration policy. This bill does some good things, however. While it's adding on to all of kinds of interests, it increases the number of immigrants that are going to be allowed in that are based on employment, that is, that are qualified to make an immediate contribution to the American prosperity and economy. But it does that by maybe doubling that category, which still makes it only perhaps 20 or 22% of total immigrants, and it does not take away from any other category, and especially it doesn't take away from the totally unlimited number of immigrants who can come in if they are close family members of U.S. citizens, without any other qualifications whatsoever. I'll get into that. I'd like to get into that more in a minute, but employment-based immigration the bill would set up a couple of points-based categories of immigrants, where copying the Canadian and Australian system, where points are assigned based upon your educational level, based upon your ability to speak English, based upon your experience in various industries, and the higher qualified you are, the more you come to the top of the list of the preferences in those categories. That's a system that's working for Australia and Canada. It's a lot more bureaucracy that comes in there. I think that an idea that we should consider, that it'd be nice for the senators to consider, would be to borrow the Australian idea that immigrants should simply be paid the same wages as similar qualified citizens, and that would eliminate much of the controversy and red tape. Let the market then rule and get rid of the red tape. But the bill does do a lot in terms of improving the high-tech immigrant possibility and improving the temporary worker capabilities in agriculture and elsewhere, although it adds layers of bureaucracy to get that done.
Well, the challenge you've got, Bruce, as you know, is we have 11 million, as best we can tell, could be higher, but at least 11 million immigrants here that we're going to absorb into the system. You know, what kind of impact is that going to have?
One of the impacts that you can't deny is that there's 11 million, all of whom have relatives. And as soon as they are brought in and given legal status, as soon as they are made permanent residents, then all of their relatives qualify to come in under various provisions in the bill. And if they're close relatives, they qualify to come in with no other qualification whatsoever.
So that 11 million could be get 30 million pretty quick.
It could be. It could be. The 30 million is an interesting number. Jeff Sessions, Senator Sessions, has proposed an amendment that would cap total immigration at 30 million over the next 10 years. There is no cap whatsoever right now. Capping it would be fine, but what if you sort of spread the numbers out, since we're bringing in about 1.2 million legally on an average in the last decade, that means by the end of, we'll put in these 11 million who are currently here and call them part of the 30 million, but we'll be bringing in, estimates range from 50% more per year to 300% more per year immigrants by the end of that 10-year period. And the huge part of that is that unlimited close family category that now accounts for more than 500,000 immigrants per year who come in with no qualification whatsoever other than that they are close family of existing permanent residents of this country. We don't have to do that kind of a thing. There was a Gallup survey earlier this year, Bill, that indicated that over 500 million adults worldwide would immigrant somewhere else if they could. 23% or 115 million of those would come to America as their first choice. We have a pool from which we can absolutely be critical and selective and pick the brightest and the best and the most qualified to be American citizens in that group. And this bill, our current system in this bill, just simply doesn't do that.
But in the past, we did that, and we were very effective, and that's been, you know, one of the contributors to our growing economy.
It absolutely has been. There's a lot of argument back and forth about what immigration does for our economy. There was a very recent study put out by the Heritage Foundation that said that that legalizing the 11 million illegals would be a net cost of $6 billion or so on the economy. I think that critics very justly argue that the premises are flawed on that, but it cannot be disputed that the illegal immigrants are among the lesser qualified, the lesser educated of the potential immigrants to bring in. There are all kinds of studies that show if you bring in immigrants who are enterprising, who are educated, who become English literate very quickly, that they very quickly begin to support the economy and growth of this country. Right. And that's indisputable in looking at history. I mean,
Well, well, not only, it's not only that they're contributing, but they themselves are winning. I mean, the big dreams that they have for their families, they're realizing here in America by assimilating and becoming part of the solution and not part of the problem. You know, the issue that we have here with our immigration program, the way it's evolved, is that it's been about, you know, more entitlements to a group of people that aren't citizens, and they're given an unfair advantage here, and taxpayers are saying, wait, hold a minute here. I mean, if you look at the immigration of Mexico, for example, because, you know, whenever, you know, people think about immigration, they look down south right away. But if you look at their immigration policy, very, very harsh. And we as Americans, if we immigrated to Mexico, we couldn't draw any benefit like the Mexicans do coming across the border. And I say Mexicans, you know, anybody south of the border, you know, you can go down into South Americans as well who come in. And, boy, they're at the trough at our expense.
You can see that. You're absolutely right. You can see that also when you look at some of the European countries like France and England and Scandinavian countries who are having great difficulties with immigration because of their socialist policies of immediately giving all kinds of goody benefits to anybody who happens to be in the country. We do that in this country, and unfortunately, judging from press reports and everything, it has come to be that it, as you would expect it to, it attracts people to come to the country. That doesn't mean that all of the immigrants who come here, not by any means, are coming here in order to get in on the gravy train, but it does mean that some do, and
yes,
increasing
exactly.
numbers do, and those are the immigrants that it seems to me that we would like to keep out.
Hey, great to have you along with us, sharing a part of your day. We're talking with Bruce Thatcher, his book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. And that's the whole point of all this, Bruce, isn't it? Is that we want an immigration policy that will work for everybody. And what I'm concerned with, and I know sometimes in my conversations with other Hispanics, particularly, because they say, well, you're Hispanic, why do you have the position you have? It's because, and I tell them, I said, well, what is happening here is that this has become such a political football that on the short term, there is a supposed gain. There's this perceived gain for Hispanics, and this is why so many people decided to switch so dramatically towards Barack Obama and give him a 25-point advantage. Now, do you think Barack Obama and the Democrats are going to be open enough to do what's right for everybody to where it's win-win for all concerned? I don't see that happening. I see it becoming more politicized. And so what you have now is you have the division that's set between, you know, all the goodies that are being handled out there. And in that process of accepting the goodies, what Hispanics are not seeing is that they basically are allowing themselves to be enslaved.
I think that's a valid position. And Hispanics are the ethnic group that is held up most often as the balance as to what this bill will or will not or should or should not do. And that's not right either.
Exactly.
But the impression has been created that Republicans are anti-Hispanic because they want to impose more controls and they want to tighten up the immigration bill to allow only fewer people and to provide less benefits to those who legally aren't even supposed to be in the country. What I have a hard time understanding is the effectiveness with which the Obama administration and the Democrats have communicated that tightening up the benefits to illegals is going to negatively affect all of the legal and desired immigrants that we have, Hispanic and otherwise, in this country. But it's been effective. They've done it.
Right.
What it causes, unfortunately, is in all of the narrative, and particularly in the political negotiations in Washington, is it causes a huge number of players on each side of the aisle to frame their behavior in terms of what they think particular groups, and most especially the Hispanics, will decide in their election success down the road. And I don't know how to get around it. I surely wish that people could become colorblind. People could right. become absolutely colorblind and say, okay, forget all that stuff. Let's talk about what's really good for the country, because what's good for the country will be good for all groups.
Right. Yeah, so what happens, you know, for the sake of their vote, you get politics involved, you bring a people group in mass number, and then you can't provide for them, which has been typical of the Democratic Party. I mean, you got big dreams. Hey, I love your big dreams that you want to help people and social justice and all that, but what can you, you know, what can you legitimately pay for? You know, you're going to have all these people come to a party, and guess what? You're going to run out of food after the first couple of hours. Not a good party.
Not a good party. And what plays into that, both in terms of the politicians and in terms of the people who see these things as positive and benefits for them, is our tendency to be very short range in our thinking. We don't tend to look down the road very far when we're saying what's good for us. And everybody's able to say, the politicians are able to say, well, I'm concerned about the next election, and we'll get by to them. We'll get by until then, okay.
Right.
And the people receiving the goodies have been so, many of them have been so conditioned that they don't really think about whether the country can pay it or not. That's not in their radar.
Right. Well, they're all scrambling to the front of the line, Bruce, because they know instinctively it can't always be this way. They're going to run out. And so they're running up to the front of the line, and this is what you've got here. Again, this mad scramble to get people to take cuts, which, you know, what we learn here in America, I mean, all you got to go is you go to kindergarten, and you watch the kids there, and they find out really quickly about justice. If somebody takes cuts in the line, you know, the kids are yelling and screaming. That ain't going to happen. And so here we are. I mean, we know this is part of the fabric and part of our understanding of fairness here in America. And we just can't have it. But we're promoting this kind of insanity with something that, you know, is there just to serve the politicians and not we the people. And this is why the people need to really understand what all is involved. And when I say all these immigrants, these illegal immigrants, and we're talking in the broader scale, not just Hispanics, is that for the sake of your vote, you're giving up your liberties, because now you're going to count on the government to be your be-all and end-all instead of you going out there and realizing the big dreams that you have for you and your family, and that you can realize here in this country if there's a level playing field. But if we're going to go ahead and compromise the immigration policy to such a degree, guess what? It's not going to work for you and your big dream, and it's not going to work for everybody else. And sooner or later, we're going to have what we have now in America. We're off the rails.
It's. I agree with you, obviously. The immigration, so much of the immigration bill is focused on controlling the border and reducing the flow of illegals into this country by controlling the border. The bill leaves gaping holes in that, but what the bill doesn't do is really effectively realize that in order to control the flow of illegals into this country, you have to reduce the demand. You have to reduce the belief, the honest belief on the part of those people who are coming here illegally, that they can get away with it. And that means you've got to enforce the laws, all of them, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's going to hurt some people.
Right.
Until we say, taking the experience of countries like Australia and Singapore and our own country earlier in the century, until you enforce the laws, until the world believes that your laws will be enforced, I don't care what you do with the border, the illegal immigration will continue, and as long as we leave the demand out there which says come to this country and without doing anything else you'll become economically much better off than you were in your old country,
right.
As long as we leave that in place, we can do everything we want to about trying to control the border. We can have all of the commissions we want to determine whether we're doing that, and we're not going to significantly change it.
Right. Well, Bruce, you know, to your point, especially when you have a president that's exercising executive orders and compromising our stance on the rule of law, you know, we send all kinds of confusing signals to people, not including, you know, the citizen of America. They're saying, well, what is all this about?
It's amazing. And going through this bill, how many places, and I think it's literally in hundreds of places, where there is a sentence put in there that this provision can be set aside by the president or by the attorney general or by the secretary of homeland security when they deem it in the national interest of the country to do so.
Wow.
The bill, rather than decreasing the executive discretion to ignore the laws, it increases it.
Well, America, we've been talking with Bruce Thatcher. His book, Immigration, How to Avoid Its Perils and Make It Work. It's linked on our website, BillMartinezLive.com. I recommend, if you're going to get in the immigration debate, you need to understand what all is involved in the history. And Bruce has done an outstanding job in researching and documenting immigration that works and immigration that doesn't work. This is a powerful book and I highly recommend it. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate the time. It's 15 minutes after the top of the hour, America. This is Bill Martinez Live.